This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Just about 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning. Coming up in a half hour at 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fagering speaks with Chris Nelder, the energy writer for Smart Planet Newsletter on oil reserves in the U.S. At 10 o'clock today on Flashpoints, writer Norman Solomon talks about a petition in support of awarding the Nobel Peace Prize to Bradley Manning. We also have a report on how Dreamers and their supporters were attacked at the U.S.-Mexico border. And more on Precious Knowledge, a documentary about the movement to save ethnic studies programs in Arizona schools. At 11 o'clock this morning on Between the Covers, author George Packers discusses his latest book, The Unwinding, An Inner History of the New America. At 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Dr. Earl Bracey talks about his book, Too Young to Die, Inner City Adolescent Homicides and the Making of a Psychologist. That's all coming up this morning on The Mighty Boo. But coming up next, stick around for Teresa Mitchell. She's hosting Press Watch with the news you're not supposed to know. And that's right here on KBOO.
Slip a bookmark into your paperback and listen to KBOO for interviews with your favorite fiction and nonfiction writers. Between the Covers airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Or maybe I should say I'm Bradley Manning. Join me for a brief peek. Hello. Bradley Manning has given us more than a brief peek. I'm trying to put on my Bradley Manning solidarity hat, but you know what? It just doesn't work with headphones. So I'll just have to have my Bradley Manning solidarity beret in here by itself. The general testifying against whistleblower Bradley Manning said yesterday that his disclosures, meaning Manning's disclosures, had worked to damage relationships with local nationals, by which he meant Afghan citizens. It seems to me that more than a decade of shooting, imprisoning, torturing, bombing, and occupying Afghanistan is likely to have done more damage to the U.S. relationship with those persons. Manning is awaiting sentencing today and faces 136 years if the maximum penalties are applied, including, I believe, it's 60 years under the Espionage Act charges. But what Manning did was not espionage. It was unauthorized disclosure to the enemy. That's you and me, the people of the U.S. and the world. That's his real crime. Bradley Manning gave his freedom to hand U.S. citizens the truth about imperialism in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it was always supremely important that we never have the truth. So thank God for Bradley Manning. Pardon me as I bump the microphone here using my handy computer. I've gone paperless lately, but I haven't figured out all the ins and outs of it. From The Guardian by Ed Pilkington. By the way, The Guardian's, of course, the go-to source because they were among the first to reveal the things that Manning revealed and that Snowden revealed. Ed Pilkington wrote, the U.S. counterintelligence official who led the Pentagon's review into the fallout from the WikiLeaks disclosure of state secrets told the Bradley Manning sentencing hearing on Wednesday that no instances were ever found of any individual killed by enemy forces as a result of having been named in the releases. Brigadier General Robert Carr, a senior counterintelligence officer who headed the Information Review Task Force that investigated the impact of WikiLeaks disclosures on behalf of the Defense Department, told a court at Fort Meade, Maryland, that they had uncovered no specific examples of anyone who had lost his or her life in reprisals that followed the publication of the disclosures on the Internet. "I don't have a specific example," he said. It has been one of the main criticisms of the WikiLeaks publications that they put lives at risk, particularly in Iran and Afghanistan. And departing from that article, that is what has always been said against intelligence disclosures, going way back to the first CIA to public defectors. There was always the pretense that investigators, or rather agents, were at risk. But anyway, returning to the article, the admission by the Pentagon's chief investigator into the fallout from WikiLeaks that no such casualties were identified marks a significant undermining of such arguments. Carr retired from active duty in 2011, and now he works for the private defense firm Northrop Grumman, and he was the first witness called by the U.S. government in the sentencing phase of the prosecution of the Army private. Manning was on Tuesday found guilty of 20 counts relating to his transmission of U.S. state secrets to WikiLeaks, carrying a maximum sentence of 136 years in military jail, a life sentence, in other words. Carr initially told the judge presiding over the case, Colonel Denise Lynn, that there had been an individual killed in Afghanistan as a result of the publication by WikiLeaks of the Afghan war logs that recorded military activities on the ground. Quoting, "As a result of the Afghan logs, I know of one individual killed, an Afghan national who had a relationship with the U.S. government and the Taliban, came out and said publicly that they had killed him as a result of him being associated with the information in these logs," end quote. That's according to Carr testifying against Bradley Manning. But under defense cross-examination, Carr conceded that the victim's name had not been included in the war logs made public by WikiLeaks. Asked by Judge Lind whether the individual who was killed was tied to the disclosures, Carr replied, quote, "The Taliban killed him and tied him to the disclosures. We went back and looked for the name in the disclosures. The name of the individual killed was not in the disclosures," end quote. On the basis of the witness clarification, Lind sustained an objection from the defense and scrubbed from the official record any reference to the alleged killing by the Taliban. There's more on that at guardian.co.uk. So in other words, the prosecution took the stand and lied its ass off. No consequences for them, though. They're the prosecution. Also turning to The Guardian, what did Bradley Manning bring to us? It's good to remember. If you've been listening to Democracy Now!, then you've heard references to the collateral damage video, is what they call it. Video showing a U.S. helicopter crew laughing as they launched an airstrike, killing a dozen people in Baghdad in July 2007, including a photographer and a driver working for Reuters. The footage was recorded on one of two Apache helicopters, which were hunting for suspected insurgents. You know, I've often criticized NPR for using the word insurgents. Funny how someone in a country that the U.S. has invaded and occupied can be called an insurgent. Where'd they surge in from? Oh yeah, they lived there. Anyway, returning to the article, they encountered a group of men on the ground who did not immediately appear armed, and there's no sign of gunshots, but one helicopter crew opens fire with shouts of, "Ha ha ha, I hit 'em," and "Oh yeah, look at those dead bastards." As the wounded are helped, one of the helicopters opens fire again with armor-piercing shells. And of course, the result was a carnage of people who, well, photographers and a van full of, a person who was taking his kids to school, if I remember correctly. Returning to the article, the next tranche of revelations came in July 2010 from documents dating from 2004 to 2009 about the Afghan war. One set raised concerns in the U.S. by suggesting alleged support for the Taliban from Pakistan, particularly that country's spy agency, the Inter Services Intelligence, the ISI, had been collaborating with the Taliban. The Afghanistan files also included details of an incident from 2007 in which U.S. Marines escaping an attack outside the city of Jalalabad fired their guns indiscriminately, killing 19 unarmed civilians and wounding 50 more. While the aftermath of the attack was plain to military authorities, the file suggested the incident was referred to in an official report only as this, quote, "the patrol returned to Jalalabad airfield," end quote. In October 2010, a series of revelations about events in Iraq, chief among these, that U.S. authorities failed to investigate hundreds of reports of abuse, torture, rape, and even murder by Iraqi police and soldiers. The reports of abuse, often supported by medical evidence, describe prisoners shackled, blindfolded, hung by wrists and ankles, subjected to whipping, punching, kicking, or electric shocks. Our buddies. Another Iraq-related revelation was that the U.S. collated details of more than 100,000 people killed in Iraq following the invasion of the country, including more than 15,000 deaths that were previously unrecorded. The tally goes against previous protests by the U.S. and the U.K. that there were not any official statistics on the death toll connected to the war. The embassy cables also said the U.S. is running a secret intelligence campaign targeted at the leadership of the United Nations. Remember that? Including the Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, and representatives from China, Russia, France, and the U.K. And there's more on that at The Guardian. So that's what we know, and that's what we've gotten used to talking about because Bradley Manning stepped up. What would we do if we didn't have people like Bradley Manning? I'd like to suggest that he is, in fact, a hero. And I think we have to ask ourselves now what we can do to support him. I think certainly there need to be calls to congressional representatives. I'm, almost hate to say it, but just proud of what Wyden and Merkley have been doing, and the rest of the Oregon congressional delegation. Well, anyway, some of them, and I think that they need more calls of support, but also there should be calls to the White House. There are petitions. And it's time to sign a petition. I guess this is a chance that is not going to be repeated with Manning and Snowden in the news. And basically imperialism being talked about around the edges. We have an opportunity to actually address it short of violence. Actually an opportunity to peacefully address that thing that the U.S. wants least to talk about, wants least to ever be discussed by the population. You know, whether the U.S. has, on behalf of the corporations that it represents, the right to stomp about the world and intimidate everyone by bombing, shooting, torturing, killing, etc. Do we think that's a good idea? Because I don't. It never was. And all imperiums tend to core themselves out. That was certainly true of Spain. It was true of Britain. And now we see that it's happening in the U.S. as we have an entire generation of youth that can't get access to a job. All of these things are linked. The fact that we have a drug war mounted against us, that's an internal war. I wonder how many people think about that, that there is a war conducted against the people of the United States by the United States. It's called the drug war, and it is essentially an extension of Jim Crow. Transparently, it is a war of apartheid. Do we want that? All connected. Meanwhile, whistleblower Ed Snowden has left the airport in Moscow today with a one-year visa from Russia. You heard that on Democracy Now! too, I imagine, if you were tuned in earlier. But from RT.com, Russia Today, NSA whistleblower Ed Snowden has been granted temporary asylum in Russia and is allowed to enter the country's territory. The whistleblower has been granted temporary political asylum in Russia, Snowden's legal representative Anatoly Kucharina said, with his words later confirmed by Russia's Federal Migration Service. Kucharina said, "I have just handed over to him papers from the Russian Immigration Service. They are what he needs to leave the transit zone." And on RT.com, you can see photographs of the documents. Kucharina showed a photocopy of the document to the press. According to it, Snowden is free to stay in Russia until at least the 31st of July 2014. His asylum status may be extended annually upon request. With his newly awarded legal status in Russia, Snowden cannot be handed over to U.S. authorities, even if Washington files an official request. He can now be transported to the United States only if he agrees to go voluntarily. Snowden departed the airport at around 3:30 Moscow time Airport sources said his departure came out 30 minutes before his new refugee status was officially announced. His present location has not been made public, nor will it be disclosed, Cucurana said, quoting, "He is the most wanted person on earth, and his security will be a priority. He will deal with personal security issues and lodging himself. I will just consult him as his lawyer," end quote. Snowden says eventually he intends to talk to the press in Russia, but it needs at least one day of privacy. The whistleblower was unaccompanied when he left the airport in a regular taxi, Cucurana added, and there are actually conflicting reports on that, that the WikiLeaks sponsor was with him. That'd be Sarah Harrison. And Russia, according to RT.com, is confident that the latest development in the Snowden case will not affect U.S. President Barack Obama's upcoming visit to Moscow. And that's according to presidential aide Yuri Ushakov. He says, "We are aware of the atmosphere being created in the U.S. over Snowden, but we didn't get any signals indicating a possible cancellation of the visit from American authorities." He told that to RIA Novosti, another Russian news source. If you have comments on the situation with Manning and Snowden, the number to call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. What should we do to support Snowden and Manning? Or if you're opposed to supporting Snowden and Manning, I'd like to know why. As the new Cold War secretly ramps up against China, Stars and Stripes reporter, ironically named John Reed, writes, "The U.S. Air Force will dramatically expand its military presence across the Pacific this year, sending jets to Thailand, India, Singapore, and Australia, according to the service's top general in the region. For a major chunk of America's military community, the so-called pivot to Asia might seem like nothing more than an empty catchphrase, especially with the Middle East once again in flames. But for the Air Force, at least, the shift is very real, and the idea behind its pivot is simple. Ring China with U.S. and allied forces, just like the West did to the Soviet Union back in the Cold War. U.S. military officials constantly say they aren't trying to contain China. They're working with the Chinese and other Pacific nations to maintain stability in the region." Still, a ring of bases looks an awful lot like something we've seen before, Reed writes. In Australia, for example, the Air Force will dispatch fighters, tankers, and at some point in the future, maybe bombers on a rotational basis. That's according to General Herbert Hawk Carlisle. Hawk Carlisle, I didn't make that up. Chief of the U.S. Air Force Operations in the Pacific. During a breakfast with reporters in Washington this week, the jets will likely start their Australian presence sometime during the next year at the Royal Australian Air Force Base at Darwin, already crowded with Marines, before moving to the nearby RAAF Base Tyndall, according to the four-star general. This is just the start of the Air Force's plan to expand its presence in Asia, according to Carlisle. In addition to the Australian deployments, the Air Force will be sending jets to Changi East Air Base in Singapore, Korat Air Base in Thailand, a site in India, and possibly bases at Kubi Point and Puerto Princesas in the Philippines and airfields in Indonesia and Malaysia. So you can find more on that at stripes.com. So what do you think about this little expansion of imperialism? Imperialism generally, your comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Annalisa is on the phone.
Oh, this is Annalisa, Teresa.
Oh, Annalisa, hi.
Good morning. I think the Nobel Peace Prize for Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden and Aaron Swartz and Julian Assange are quite appropriate.
Well, I have to agree. You know that there is a Peace Prize, not the Nobel Peace Prize, but a Peace Prize has been awarded to Manning. I forget the name of it. I just saw a press release on that.
Yeah, so I think that's a very good idea. Peace Prize or... yeah, whatever the name might be.
Do you think it's a good idea to call the White House and pressure Obama to pardon him?
Oh, sure. Oh, definitely. I think it's... I had bad dreams about Bradley Manning. I had the feeling it would come out the way it came out, as it did, because he didn't have a chance. And I felt he didn't have a chance. But anyway, oh, yeah, of course, these people should be heralded as heroes, even by Barack Obama.
I wasn't surprised by the outcome either. I mean, for the military, the first thing that he did was disobey, and that'll set him right off because
right.
they all have to obey out the wazoo, and someone doesn't obey, well, it's like running a red light right in front of you, and they're all going to get mad about it. But Obama could pardon him.
Yeah, of course, and that will be really good for the country too, for the emotional and psychological thinking of the United States.
Of course, I don't believe that Obama would pardon him, but it'd be good to pressure him.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Thanks for calling, Annalise. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And Ken's on the line.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
I'd like to make 2 points or whatever. One is, it's widely rumored anyway that Dick Cheney was the person responsible for the outing of Valerie Plame. What we never found out about that is how many agents she was working with got rolled up. So,
and she was working. Okay, well, let's frame this.
Remember that case?
I do remember it. It was his aide went down for that, not Cheney himself. But it was pretty clear that it was Cheney's initiative. And
yeah.
Valerie Plame was working on anti-nuclear terrorism and probably was one of the few CIA agents out actually doing any good for the world.
Exactly.
Was trying to stop nuclear proliferation. And
yes, right. Thank
she
you
was
for
outed
that.
In revenge because her husband
was the one who exposed the Niger yellow cake fiasco.
Yes. He exposed that. He exposed the whole weapons of mass destruction lie, that there was no yellow cake. I mean, even if there had been yellow cake shipped from Hin to Yan, yellow cake is a long way from being hexavalent. Uranium hexafluoride. And that's a ways from being weapons grade uranium. So it was all just a way of scaring the public and
reprisal.
Yeah. And her husband exposed that. And so this ugly thing came down in which she was outed and subject to, well, all the things that just might happen to a CIA agent who's floating around the Middle East under a false name, exposing people.
Yeah, okay. Well, my other point was going to be, now, I presume that in a military trial, the accused is supposed to be guaranteed a fair trial, I presume. Perhaps that's a wrong assumption. But isn't it obvious that if the President of the United States declares him guilty, that he cannot have a fair trial?
Do you remember Nixon and Angela Davis?
Oh, geez.
I see how old you are.
Yeah, right.
yeah, that seems to be
you.
The case. Well, returning to Plame, I guess the point that you were making is that it's really hypocritical for the U.S. government to go after Manning for exposing, you know, what they're doing and saying that someone might get hurt when the U.S. government under Dick Cheney actively tried to get someone hurt just for revenge.
No, very likely did get some people wiped out.
Yeah, the people working with her, I guess that's yes. That could happen, couldn't it? But I don't know the specifics that actually happened.
Well, you don't know the specifics because of the manipulation. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you for your call, Ken. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Heidi's on the line.
Hey, Teresa. I just want to thank you so much for your show. You always put a different spin than we get from anywhere else, so I wanted to thank you for that. I wanted to make a point really, really quick about all the whistleblowers and then actually talking about an anti-imperialist event, talking about Guantanamo that's happening tonight.
All right.
But one of the things I wanted to say, and this comes from a Glenn Greenwald piece, one of the things that we need to keep in mind is that the U.S. government uses and attacks and demonizes whistleblowers as a means of distracting attention from their own exposed wrongdoing. These guys did not act with any self-interest in mind. The opposite is true. They undertook great personal risk and sacrifice for one overarching reason, to make their fellow citizens aware of what the government is doing in the dark. So,
you mean they knew they'd be crucified?
I can't even imagine being that brave. One of the other points that I've read, I think it was on Truth Out or Truth Digger, one of those, with all of the people, I was watching CBS News, unfortunately, because my mother had it on. I guess there's over 1 million people that have access to all this NSA information. And my question is, and one of the questions that Glenn Greenwald raised, as well as Chris Hedges and other people, why aren't there more people that have come forward to expose what is happening? That is a really good question to be thinking about, like when we're thinking about speaking out against injustice.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. I think we can answer that in an acute and a chronic phase. I mean, acutely, although the information is splashing right now, and I'm saying that this is our chance, It hasn't, it's not something that's much talked about, and certainly we don't talk about imperialism or how it works or what price we pay for it. I mean, this is a country that is groaning under the weight of supporting the billionaires and corporations and the military that all hold together. And the 99-point-whatever-it-is percent of us have had our lives steadily degraded and our agency steadily withdrawn, so that we see situations that not only does the imperialism go on in a shocking way, but we can't mobilize support to stop global warming because all of our energy goes into the Pentagon and into the corporations.
Exactly. And you know, I think that one of the great things about your show is you keep talking about things that nobody else talks about. Fukushima, I mean, you do such a great job because you keep talking and bringing and raising these things to the surface. So my last point, because I know we're probably running out of time, tonight at the First Unitarian Church, which is on Salmon, 1226 Southwest Salmon, that's put on for veterans for peace, is called The Grotesque Injustice of Guantanamo. And I encourage everybody who cares about anything to come out and let's talk about it. The Veterans for Peace puts on great events. I'm part of Students United for Palestine Equal Rights at PSU, and we're trying to do more cross solidarity with those folks. But they're going to have S. Brian Wilson, Medea Benjamin's actually going to escape, and I believe. We have Laura Sandow, who's a U.S. Navy veteran serving at Guantanamo Naval Base when the first detainees were brought there in 2001 and 2002. And so I think that talking about political prisoners, not only just bringing all those issues together, which is what your show does so well. So I want to make sure that folks know that event's going on tonight at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church. So,
12th and Salmon, okay.
Thanks for letting me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye.
Well, you know, I criticize a lot, and but I'm going somewhere with this, and I probably don't say enough what I'd actually like to see. And I did see on Salon.com an article that showed pretty much, well, as far as I can tell, with a little bit of information, exactly the sort of thing that I'm aiming at and that I'm suggesting would be good for the U.S. people to do. And it's about, the article is by Sophie McAdam, and it's about the Spanish town of Marina Leda. And she writes, on the face of it, the Spanish town of Marina Leda is indistinguishable from any other in its region. And she goes on to talk about it. It's a pretty little town. And she says, it's also a democratic anti-capitalist village whose mayor actively encourages shoplifting. Since the financial crisis began in 2008, Marina Leda has shot to fame, and so has its maverick mayor, Juan Manuel Sanchez Gordillo, who earned the nickname the Spanish Robin Hood after organizing and carrying out a series of supermarket raids in a direct action protest last August. Basic groceries such as oil, rice, and beans were loaded onto carts, wheeled from the store, and taken to a local food bank to help the poor as helpless cashiers looked on, some crying. In an interview after the event, Gordillo, the democratically elected mayor since 1979, said it was not theft but a nonviolent act of disobedience. He said, there are many families who can't afford to eat. In the 21st century, this is an absolute disgrace. Food is a right, not something with which you speculate, end quote. Gordillo, who has political immunity from prosecution, is angry that supermarkets throw food away while millions go hungry, and he also blames big supermarkets for the death of the small-scale farmer. He says, a product is sold to the consumer for 704% more than what the farmer is paid for it, end quote. The Robin Hood raids were popular with many in Andalusia, a region where crippling austerity measures and huge jobless losses have hit the hardest. But in this province alone, there are 690,000 empty properties due to bank foreclosures, but not in Marina Leda, because Gordillo has a solution. Anyone who wants to build their own house can do so for free. Materials and qualified workmen are provided by the town hall, and the generous allowance of 192 square meters means the homes are spacious. Families can then pay just 15 euros, that's $19 a month, for the rest of their lives, with the agreement that the house cannot be sold for private gain. There's much more of that at salon.com. I encourage you to read it. Well, coming to the end of Press Watch and getting ready for a pair to come into the studio. Once again, I encourage you to support Bradley Manning and Ed Snowden in some way. I don't think this chance will come to us again anytime soon. Let's do it. Petitions, call your representatives, hit the streets, whatever you need to do. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland.
Community Radio and Veterans for Peace Chapter 72 are proud to co-sponsor a special presentation on Thursday, August 1st at 6:30 p.m. An insider's account of Guantanamo will examine the illegality, immorality, and inhumanity of the U.S. Naval Detention Center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, with Stephen T. Wax, Chief Federal Public Defender for the District of Oregon, Laura Sandown, a U.S. Navy veteran who served at Guantanamo, and S. Brian Wilson, a longtime peace activist, among others. An insider's account of Guantanamo will take place at the First Unitarian Church, 1034 Southwest 13th Avenue in downtown Portland. Thursday, August 1st, doors open at 6:30 p.m. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.